The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra, still going strong. Today we're talking transfers. Liverpool signed Mo Salah, but while he's a refreshing idea in the height of summer, will he be unsatisfying come those cold midwinter days? He is called Salah after all. We've got the other rumoured moves. We talk about under-21s for the second time in a fortnight. The English getting more good news with the polls. We hear from a man in Russia about a tournament that's going on over there. And we salute the liberation of Leighton Orient. It's all coming up in this Football Weekly Extra, which has nothing to do with Football Weekly. That's a totally separate entity that has its own publisher, readership, different content, and a very different worldview. Wow, we're back again, everybody, listener. And when I say we, I'm very much talking about Simon Burnton.
Hello.
James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
And Barry Glendenning, hot off the Ascot desk, Barry.
Good day, Jimbo.
Why?
I'm just all roiled out.
Oh, I see.
Feeling
all right,
okay. Posh.
Oh, is that a posh, Barry?
Oh, very, yes.
Do some more.
What would one like to hear?
Ah, this is brilliant. Can you do the whole show like that?
That could be tricky.
Right. Have you been having fun on the Ascot desk, Barry?
It's not really, no. I mean, it's okay. It's all the admin of Royal Ascot, but none of the fun, because I'm not actually there. I'm manning the live blog from Guardian Towers.
Right. Have you been to Ascot?
I have been in the past, yes.
Is it fun?
I enjoy it, yes. Although they have these men who walk around in green velvet coats whose job it is to try and ensure that people have as little fun as possible.
Oh. By
implementing very petty rules and regulations about where you're allowed to go and what you're allowed drink in what area and all that, but once you get past them, it's very good fun. Lots of nice scenery, lots of interesting bloodstock on show, equine and human, it's very enjoyable.
I don't know where the folk with the velvet green velvet sleeves were on Thursday, but I'm sure we'll all have seen the almighty dust up that was happening as a large, bald, portly gentleman got tasty with another race car. He was stripped to the waist. I don't know how he did that at Royal Ascot.
Yeah, they have a very strict dress code, so stripping to the waist would very much be frowned upon. Just taking your hat off is frowned upon, right. So, but I don't know what the source of that row was. But the thing that sort of, it was probably late in the afternoon, sun shining, a lot of booze is on board. So, these things are going to happen from time to time. And all parties involved, you'd hope, would be suitably embarrassed now that it's gone viral on YouTube.
Yeah.
But, it's not the end of the world.
All right. Well, it's not like there's not any football to talk about, so let's move on to that. And the English getting tasty elsewhere in Europe. The Under-21 Championship, which, as you know, is going on in Poland. Eddie Boothroyd's side have only got them booked their place in the semi-finals with a whopping 3-0 win against the host, Poland.
Yeah, took them apart, Jimbo. Bringing some of the momentum from what we saw at the Under-20 World Cup. I think everyone's kind of buoyed by that. People no longer have an inferiority complex. Think, why not? We can go for this.
Right.
And again, just another illustration of Jordan Pickford's remarkable distribution for that first goal. Incredible ball out to Ben Chilwell. You could say that was indicative of Eddie Boothroyd long ball football, but not the case, Barry, maybe.
Eddie Boothroyd has long been tarred with this, long ball brush.
Right.
In Mike Calvin's Living on the Volcano book about management, he features quite prominently in that early doors and says himself that he's been tattooed with the long ball thing. But I think Boothroyd's been unfairly tarnished as some sort of Neanderthal when everything suggests that nothing could be further from the truth. He is now proving that there is more to his shtick than these caveman tactics he's accused of always employing.
How old is he now then?
Well into his 40s.
Yeah, I imagine he's
okay.
48 now.
By the time Calvin finished the book, he was manager of England under 20s and he got promoted to the under-21s when Southgate got the senior job. So he says, you know, I know how to win a game. I know how to spot and exploit a weakness. And I think that's something we saw in the game against Slovakia. I can see where we've got a problem and I know how we can deal with it. I see that early because of the batterings I've had as a manager. It goes on to say, does this job suit me? At this point in my life, it's absolutely perfect. I can go to different games every week. I've got 40-odd days with my players. I can think about what I'm going to do with them. I'm contributing something towards a greater cause. If that doesn't sound too fluffy, we're going to be all right. And, you know, looks like he's being vindicated.
Right. Well, this England under-21 side certainly appears to be developing a project that's going somewhere. If you look at how the tournament began for them, this performance was on a different level. Is that fair, Chase?
Yeah, I think right from the get-go. They were in the lead within 5 minutes. And to be honest, that had been coming already, even in that short period of time. They'd had two or three chances leading up to it. I think it's going to be very curious to see how this England side gets on in the semi-finals, whoever they play.
Who might they play? Could be Spain, is that right? It could be Germany?
Yeah, it could be both of those teams.
Right.
And I think you'd still have to say that they are on another level from this England team.
It could be both of those teams. That would be really unfair.
Yeah, an amalgamation of the two. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at England in this group so far, I would say you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be as convincing as they've been, but at the same time, you'd expect them to win against Poland, Slovakia and Sweden.
Right.
I think the others have had, the other favourites for this competition have had slightly more challenging groups and yet have been impressive all the same, particularly Spain and the Germans. And, you know, when you look at, again, some of the players that Spain have got, Saúl, Marco Asensio, players who regularly have experience of going deep in the Champions League, even winning that competition. And then also Germany, who a lot of their on the 21 side is actually playing for the senior side at the Confederations Cup at the moment. And yet some of the goals they were scoring against Denmark the other night were spectacular. So it'll be really interesting to see how they do against one of those sides.
What you're saying is let's not lose the run of ourselves then over this 3-0 defeat of Poland.
No, also, I mean, Poland, again, hosts, but without probably two of their best players of that age group who were not allowed to go to the tournament. By Napoli, which is Arkadiusz Milik and Zielinski, who would have made that game a bit more interesting. But still, yeah, you can only beat what's put in front of you, and England certainly have done very impressively so in that regard so far in this tournament.
Right. Elsewhere in the under-21 tournament, the aforementioned Germans did beat Denmark 3-0. The Czechs did a number on Italy, 3-1, which has seriously put Italy's participation in the semis in doubt.
Yeah, they've got a real difficult task now. On Saturday, they have to beat Germany by two clear goals, which is going to be difficult when you look at this German side, which has Serge Gnabry, newly of Bayern Munich, and Mo Dahoud, newly of Borussia Dortmund. This was supposed to be the best Italy side that they've sent to this tournament in 20 years. It's got a lot of Serie A experience. But a lot of things went wrong for them. Donnarumma does seem to have been affected by the speculation about his future. He didn't make a single save against the Czechs. All their goals went through him, and he could have done better, particularly for the first one. And then, again, question marks asked of the manager, Di Biagio, who kind of unnecessarily rotated his team in that second game, perhaps took the Czechs a little too lightly, made a lot of changes in midfield. They're really up against it now. So yeah, the Italians looking like they're going to have a disappointing Euro under-21s.
Right. Schick, Patrick Schick, who will be joining Juventus now. Kevin Andriola says, what are your thoughts on a potential starting connection between Dybala and Schick at the Old Lady next time around?
It could be very tasty. Schick took his day off to go back to Turin and have his medical with Juventus, where he joins them for 30.5 million, but he's a very exciting player. We raved about him on the European Football Show this season because he scored Bergkamp-esque goals, and some people have compared him to Zlatan, particularly in terms of his height and how elegant he is with the ball and what he can do with it. But Schick, I think, will probably start on the bench for Juventus next season. There is a clause in his contract at the moment which would allow him to go back to Sampdoria if, after the pre-season he has with the team, he doesn't feel that he's going to have regular game time. So, interesting.
This shick doesn't happen.
But I think he's someone to really look out for if you haven't seen him already, because although he didn't score in that 3-1 win against Italy, he pulled the Italians all over the place and was very impressive in that game as well.
Right. Well, we'll talk more about all the transfers that are happening or not happening a little bit later on. But after this,
did you say he's quite tall? Because when Juventus say concede corners, if he's put on a post, he'd be shick on a stick.
Yeah. More of this kind of thing coming up in a second or two when we talk about actually what's going on in Russia with our pal Nick Ames. All right, listeners, Confederations Cup update. It's rest day over in Russia in the kind of warm-up tournament for next year's World Cup. Nick Ames is very much there. He's currently in St. Petersburg and he joins us now on the line. Nick, how are you?
I'm very well, James. The weather's been quite bad here for some days, but I'm glad to report that the sun has come out this afternoon, so I'm enjoying a little stroll around the city.
Right, because there was some trepidation about it as a host nation. What's your experience been so far vis-a-vis people biffing you up on the subway and the enormous travel distances involved?
It's been fine, to be honest. As I say, the Confederations Cup, the cities hosting it are Moscow, St. Petersburg, Kazan and Sochi. They're all probably the best side of what Russia can show. They're very well organised, very modern. St. Petersburg and Kazan especially are very international. Very used to receiving tourists, very used to holding events. And it's all gone really, really smoothly. The volunteers are probably the friendliest I've ever encountered at any tournament on the 1 kilometre walk from the metro station to the station in St. Petersburg yesterday for Canada and Australia. I must have done about 100 high fives, I think. We just sort of armed out, looking to interact with you as you walk down there.
Locals keep giving you high fives as you walk down the street?
Well, there are these volunteers, far too many than are necessary for the football this year, really. So they're all dressed in blue, and they're all sort of dancing on the spot as you walk down towards the St. Petersburg Stadium, and they're just holding their hands out, offering you a high five. So I felt like I was doing the last mile of the London Marathon, or I just won a US election or something.
Nick, just as this is being treated as a dry run for the World Cup, would it not have been rather expedient for England to have been invited to this tournament so that we could see what would happen when their travelling support did their usual thing of rocking up to the town square and annexing it rather than having a party in it?
I must admit, I was walking through the centre of Kazan last week thinking this is fantastic, but what about when 500 England fans get here? Which, you know, one mustn't be judgmental. That is the issue. It's all incredibly pleasant here now. What will it be like when there are a lot more nationalities piling in to what are very pleasant public spaces? And I think it's just really impossible to tell.
Have you grown a beard for your trip? Because I'm just thinking, were you to do so, the right kind of pointy goatee-esque affair, you would look a ringer for Lenin and you could get high fives from everyone.
That's very nice of you to say so. But I sadly can't go such an impressive affair. I'm a bit stubbly, I'll say that much.
All right then. What's the food been like, Nick?
The food has been good. I've eaten in quite a few Georgian restaurants, which is really the way to go if you want some quality cuisine here. They use Georgian food a lot, so you have very nice dumplings and meats and things like this. And in St. Petersburg, I've been in quite a few quite hipsterish cafes, really. It's all fairly trendy, if you know where to go.
Georgian food, Simon. You've had some experience of that yourself.
I've been to a London-based Georgian restaurant.
All right.
Yeah, London's Holloway Road. They love walnuts.
Do they?
In Georgia. Yeah, walnuts with everything. Pickled walnuts, fresh walnuts. Standard off-the-shelf walnuts.
Okay.
Dumplings and walnuts.
Right. Walnut surprise. It's just walnuts.
Yeah.
I knew Jimbo was going to start making walnut quips
Anyway, right, so there you go. That's the Confederations Cup, which they might not have had any trouble off the field, but they've had it on field. Did you see the Mexicans and the Kiwis having a bit of a set?
The VAR sorted that out.
Did they?
No, of course it didn't.
Oh, right.
Further disasters of the VAR system.
Oh, okay. There do seem to be a lot of brawls and on-pitch set-tos happening at the moment.
Which, for a tournament which is regularly dismissed as one that nobody really wants to participate in, a lot of the players seem to be taking it very seriously indeed.
Mm.
I suppose footballers by nature are competitive animals. So,
do you think they're all tired after a long season and just want to get on? And
tired and cranky.
Yeah, I think possibly.
Maybe, it could be. But, you had this mass brawl between Mexico and New Zealand towards the end. And
it was like Ascot.
And the VAR system was called upon to, sort it out, and made a complete pig's ear of it again. So it's this experiment with it is proving to be totally disastrous.
Well,
and I, for one, am delighted.
There you go. There you go. Mexico looking set for a place in the semi-finals, along with Portugal and Chile and Germany are likely to be there as well. So there you go.
There was also the Cristiano Ronaldo post-match presser. I think journalists were generally surprised to see him turn up, given all the news about him. But he didn't take any questions. He just made a short statement about the game and left.
He scored the only goal.
Yeah, and see, I think since we last recorded, he's announced he's going to pay the €14.7 million the Spanish state has billed him for as a gesture of goodwill.
That's very nice, Phil.
Isn't it? There's very philanthropic and civic spirited.
So that
of him
transfer
to pay
business,
his tax bill.
That's all done now, is it? He's not going anywhere.
That seems to be the suggestion. Yeah.
Okay.
Although he could face further issues with the Spanish Inland Revenue.
L'Equipe today had details of a secret phone call between Zidane and Mbappe.
Oh, yeah.
In which apparently Zidane promised to get rid of one of the front three to leave an Mbappe-shaped hole.
Right.
So maybe not.
Sounds like we should be talking about transfers then. So were you on rumour mill duty today?
I was, yes.
Okay. What else did you have there?
So I guess Bonucci is his future's in under question. Obviously, he's been linked with Chelsea, but also with Real Madrid. And potentially, if he goes to Real Madrid, Varane might then move to Manchester United. That's just like several different rumours from today all joined together into one little chain.
Right. Well, Sonny asking the question, if Juve sell both Bonucci and Sandro, who seems Chelsea-bound, would this make them more vulnerable in Serie A next year? Who can replace those two to keep them competitive? James?
It'd be very difficult to replace the two.
Do you think Bonucci's going to go?
Well, if you look at this season, there was the bust up between him and Allegri in February, which led to Bonucci being dropped and made to sit in the stands for that away leg against Porto. There have also been reports in the last few days of a bust up in the dressing room at half time in the Champions League final, in which he apparently had a big go at Paulo Dybala, who was booked early on in that game, and then, in Bonucci's opinion, didn't make a single challenge in order not to get sent off. And he had a go at his fellow defender, Andrea Barzagli. He's come out and said, this is all rubbish. I didn't say anything of the sort. And he did sign a new contract this year until 2020 or 2022, which made him a very high earner. He had offers to leave last summer to Chelsea and also to Manchester City. And he turned those down, supposedly because he wants to finish his career at Juventus. And to be honest, I can see where Juventus is coming from in not wanting to let him go, because of the three big defenders that they've got, he's the youngest. He's 30. And he is the hardest to replace, I think, because he's got a very unique skill set. But they do have players behind him, Rugani, Mattia Caldara, who could come in and replace him. Sandro, I think, is another difficult one, because Chelsea have bid $60 million for him and will come back again for him. Juventus don't want to lose him, but if the player wants to leave, they've always said they won't stand in the player's way. They just have to get the right deal. Things are becoming quite complicated now for Juventus because I think they did not intend to be buying fullbacks this summer. Mm. They were very happy with Sandro and Alves. Alves is throwing a big spanner in the works by
basically... Yeah, now, quickly on that, we were wondering on Monday, what was it that precipitated his relationship, which had previously been quite amicable with the club? And all we've got is the fact that they lost the Champions League final.
Well, I mean, he's since come out and basically said that he doesn't have a problem with Juventus. If anything, it's not a lifestyle thing, it's a cultural thing, that after a year in Italy... they live football in a way that is un-Alves-like. And that also in his kind of career planning, he did intend to have an experience in England. And you could say that after winning two or three titles in Italy, he feels that he's done his job there and we'll move on. But this does come as a big, big surprise to Juventus and makes it very difficult for them.
Right. Rob asks, what is the truth behind the situation with Moise Keane's dad and the tractors? They are in danger of losing 17-year-old forward Moise Keane if they don't give his dad the fleet of tractors they promised. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, a fleet of tractors and agricultural equipment for his farm in Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. His dad coming out and basically saying, I'm his agent, not Mino Raiola. We never paid anything. We never signed anything with Raiola, but Raiola famously doesn't sign contracts with his clients. They do everything on trust. But yeah, Kane is a very a top prospect who made his debut for Juventus this year. I think became the first millennial to score in Europe's top five leagues in what the penultimate game of the season against Bologna. So someone who's got a very big future.
Right. If they deliver the tractors,
yeah.
Okay, super. Now
he could adopt Patrick Bamford.
Yeah,
because he's a JCB heir.
Oh, is he?
In fact, you could have a strike partnership of tractor.
Right. Yeah. He could go and play for Ipswich, etc. And so on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mo Salah. That's been all over the place. Huge amount of excitement on Merseyside for this former Chelsea player and his arrival for, what is it, £37 million?
And rising. I mean, Salah is a fantastic player. I think he'll be a success at Liverpool. But you also look at the deal that Roma have done for him, which in euro terms could amount to €50 million. I mean, they announced this yesterday and it's all there for people to see because Roma are a public listed company and have to reveal the details of deals like this, and it's €42.5 million with €8 million in bonuses.
Right.
So for a player that they signed for
15,
it's a tremendous piece of business in what, the space of 2 years.
Right. They signed him for 15 because he hadn't been a tremendous success in the Premier League.
Yes. Let's not forget that Salah made his name doing it against English clubs. Scored 3 in 4 games against Chelsea, scored a couple of games against Spurs, scored against Arsenal when he was at Chelsea, and not making it at Chelsea in that era, well, it hasn't done the likes of Kevin De Bruyne,
right,
Romelu Lukaku, Juan Cuadrado so bad. They've all revealed themselves to be very, very good players in their own right. And I think the curious thing about Salah is where he'll fit in at Liverpool, because at Roma he plays on the right-hand side. Sadio Mane plays there for Liverpool. And
right.
I know a lot of people are excited about seeing them both together. It's just a question of where. Does Salah go out and play on the left? Does Mane do that instead? Because clearly Salah has not been signed just to add depth to that Liverpool side. You don't pay upwards of £50 million for someone who's a squad player.
According to a note I have here, close to £300 million are now being spent on Chelsea players from that era who were let go by the club but then went on to impress in other places, including a large chunk of that from Chelsea themselves when they bought back Nemanja Matic.
Yeah, that's true. I think actually Chelsea do get a slice of this deal.
Do they?
Yeah, I think there is a sell-on percentage in there.
Right.
Small, but still get something out of it.
But anyway, thumbs up then for Liverpool and their acquisition of Mo Salah.
Yeah, fantastic player, super quick. 15 goals, 11 assists last year. Brilliant. Mm.
Boom.
What if anything does it say about the Premier League that in the space of 2 years, he was sold for what was it, 11, 14, 15?
Yeah.
And it has now been bought back for 40, or does it say anything?
It keeps happening. I mean, again, those players that we mentioned, I mean, particularly De Bruyne, who went to Wolfsburg and was not only a great success, he was player of the season when City decided to buy him. I just think it shows that Chelsea know how to identify talent, but perhaps don't know how to make the most of it. And again, you look at these under-20s and under-21 England teams, which are doing so well. So many of those players are Chelsea players, and they don't get the opportunity to play there and break through there.
Well, I find the whole Tammy Abraham's thing extraordinary. Mm. I mean, he scored, what was it, nearly 30 goals in a bad Bristol City team last season that nearly got relegated. What could he do in a team that isn't struggling, that where he will be provided with more bullets? But and yet, he's now, what, been loaned to Swansea, is it, for next season? So, you know, they seem you are not going to get in this Chelsea team.
Hmm. But there's just news today of Chelsea signing one of Ajax's hottest prospects, Daishawn Ridan. So, I mean, they're still accumulating young players.
Hmm.
The pathway from their youth system into the Chelsea first team has been hard to traverse.
That name again?
Putting people off. Daishawn Ridan.
Okay.
That is almost certainly pronounced absurdly.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay. That's exciting news for Belgian football then.
Quite unhappy about his departure. Hmm. But yeah, they continue to accumulate and worry about the rest later.
All right. Danny Welbeck's been on the Twitter and he said, if Alexis Sanchez leaves Arsenal this season, I will PayPal everyone who retweets this £20. That's how confident I am that he isn't leaving.
Ooh.
It's a big shout from Danny Welbeck, isn't it? That could be an even bigger bill than the one that Cristiano Ronaldo's just had to pay. but Simon, in the rumour bill, what do they think? Sanchez staying put?
Sanchez was not being rumoured about today.
Okay.
Particularly. Arsenal, obviously still linked, and some papers were saying that they're increasingly confident of signing Mbappe, and other papers saying that a deal for Mbappe looks remote.
Right.
Logic suggests that the latter is the more likely reflection of truth.
My understanding is that Arsenal are very confident about Mbappe. However, that Real Madrid phone call you talked about does sound quite persuasive as well.
Hmm.
What's your feeling, Simon?
As I understand it,
because PSG are in the mix as well, aren't they?
PSG are also in the mix. As I understand it, he would like to move to Real Madrid, but is worried about a lack of game time.
Right.
If Zidane has made an offer, a guarantee that a place will be available for him in the first 11, then that's that question answered, isn't it?
I suppose it is.
I suppose the one Galactico who is expendable, looking at that final and how Real Madrid played in the final third of the season, beat Gareth Bale now.
Gareth Bale.
So,
I am convinced Gareth Bale will be a Manchester United player at the start of next season.
Really?
Yep.
There you go, everybody. Rhys Oxford has joined Borussia Mönchengladbach on loan. I remember Rhys Oxford from that tremendous performance against Arsenal, and after that I'm a bit sketchy. What did I miss?
I don't think you missed much.
Right?
But yeah, he was being hailed as this bright young thing. He was only 16, I think, when he made that appearance, and was on loan at Reading last season, but only featured in 5 games, I think. But yeah, good move for him. It's nice to see young English players going abroad to try their luck.
Absolutely. They've had one or two problems with Borussia Mönchengladbach, but a massive club. Be interesting to see how that works out. Peter Nichols wants to hear Simon Burnton's thoughts on Will Hughes signing for Watford. Most understated signing of the window so far, says Peter Nichols.
Well, a few years ago, it would have been unimaginable for Watford to have signed him. He was the most exciting young English midfield talent, broke into the first team at Derby early, was being linked with big teams.
Mm.
His progress since has been disrupted a bit by injury. So if last season was a little disappointing by his standards, the recovery from long-term injury partly explains it, as does Derby's consistent, repeated failure to achieve anything like what's expected of them, turnover in managers. The stage hasn't been set for him to shine over the last couple of years for a variety of factors. He's still very young. He's still in the under-21 team. He's one of the quite significantly over-21 players in the England under-21 team at the current tournament in Poland. And the potential's still there. He's a bright player.
What kind of player are we talking about, Sam?
So He's a passing midfielder.
Right.
He's technically
a Stevie G quarterback type.
I don't think he's quite so dynamic. Mm. He has contributed. He does contribute goals, but I don't think that he is that he gets about quite that much. But technically, very good. His vision is good. He passes the ball along the ground. You know, he creates chances. And given that Watford have struggled to fill their homegrown player slots, and given his age, this it seems like a very, very good deal, low-risk deal for them.
Right. Well, that's excellent news. How excited are we about China's under-20 team playing in the German 4th Division next season? How weird is this story?
First I heard of it.
Okay, so China's under-20 national team will be playing in the German 4th Division, Barry.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, there's 19 teams in there. They will, I assume, therefore become the 20th and will play the other 19 teams, but they will not appear in the league table. They'll be the phantom side.
How odd.
Yeah. It's really strange, isn't it?
And how did this happen?
Well, only 19 teams qualified for the Regional Southwest League, with the German FA therefore inviting China to enter a team and create an even fixture list. League executive Felix Weidmann told Bild all 19 clubs were in favour, adding, "I therefore believe the project is on a good path." I think it's the future. So, that's a story, isn't it?
It football. Is a story.
Hey, try and get your head around that one.
I've got something to a football thing.
Oh, yeah.
Leeds go back to training today. First team training starts at Leeds today. MK Dons back today. Nottingham Forest back yesterday.
Wow.
The first Premier League team to return to pre-season training, I think, is Brighton next Thursday. Essentially, the new season has begun.
Wow.
Today is the launch, the start of the new season.
And in non-league, Margate's manager was very upset because his striker, Michael Thalassiotis, decided to go and appear on Love Island.
Oh, really?
ITV reality show.
Yeah, I've never seen Love Island. How does it differ from the other reality shows?
There's a lot of people having sex.
Do they actually have sex?
Yes.
And it's all captured on film, is it?
No, they tend to do it furtively under the cover of a large duvet.
All right. So they
but it's lots of beautiful men and women of very limited intelligence. and Thalassiotis was a standout sicko, even with that low bar.
Okay.
But he went to appear on Love Island. He was sort of parachuted in as a late entrant.
Literally?
Mixed things up a bit. No, not literally. But very pretty boy, but his manager at Margate was very upset because he said, you know, he's gone to appear in the show. He didn't tell me he's going to miss pre-season. But on, I think it was Tuesday night, Michael was voted off.
Was he?
Yes.
On any particular kind of reason? Or
he didn't. He ain't got the banter.
Has he not?
Jimbo, he wasn't prepared to graft.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've not seen this show. I'm aware of its Italian counterpart, which I'm all right in thinking that Toto Schillaci won the Italian version of this.
But this isn't a celebrity thing.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a celebrity thing. Right. Yeah.
Celebrity Love Island.
Yeah.
Right.
But, so Margate fans can be very happy.
Is there a celebrity Love Island in this country?
I don't know. I'd never seen it before.
We could start one.
Recently, I had a lady friend staying in my house for a while, and that's how I got into it, because I started watching the kind of shows I would never see unless there was a lady in my house.
She took you to places,
but she did. Yeah.
All right.
So I'm now hopelessly addicted to Love Island. It's a fascinating study on the human psyche, and a really depressing.
Would you go on it, Barry?
I'm far too ugly to go on it. I wouldn't be allowed to go on it.
I don't know. All right, well, thanks, Barry. Keep us, you know, stay across that and we'll be coming
back.
But
it's no, there's no longer a football connection, you know. I can only tenuously.
Right. Okay. We should probably move on. Tell you what, let's just have a quick pause and then we'll be back with our final item today. And it's perhaps one of the biggest of all. Leighton Orient, everybody. Hurrah! Independence Day for Leighton Orient, Simon.
Yes. tasty news.
Yes.
From Orient.
You say that because there's donuts involved.
And ice cream.
Oh, and ice cream. Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah. That's right, the man behind Baskin-Robbins. Yes, it's the new owner of Leighton Orient. So he's going to sprinkle his hundreds and thousands over the club.
And that's very nicely done. Well, who's certainly got a big hole in the middle of their finances. We were following their misadventures all through the season. Becchetti, of course, earning the opprobrium of the fans for his willful manner of dismissing, manner of dismissing managers, but also the threat of them being wound up in a very real and legal sense, which thankfully was averted last week when Becchetti, to give him his due, actually gave the crown their due and settled up. So he's passed it on to Nigel Travis, who is chief executive of the Dunkin' Brands Group, which features Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins. What's your favourite Baskin-Robbins flavour?
I don't think I've had one in a long time, James. Right.
When I was a boy...
I've never heard of this company.
Baskin-Robbins?
Never.
When I was a lad, when I were a wee lad, once a year in my primary school, we'd be led out of school and we'd walk hand in hand round to the local branch of Baskin-Robbins. Right. We'd all get an ice cream.
Well, you see, back in those days, Barry... ice creams were very much the stuff of madman's dreams. If you were lucky, you might see a little van turn up with a scoop of vanilla. Well, I say scoop, but a kind of dollop, a splodge of vanilla with a flake stuck in it. Whereas Baskin-Robbins introduced 31 flavours. It was like going from black and white to colour, I think. And if they wanted to make their name a little bit more present in, you know, the minds of folk around this country, they should probably, I don't know, sponsor something where people would talk about them a bit. That would be my thing. But anyway, what Nigel Travers clearly knows his onions. It's a strange image. His donuts. He's taken over the club, and they were on the verge of making it into the championship when Becchetti took over.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he's left them in just out the bottom of the fourth
National
division.
League.
Yeah,
yeah.
So. Obviously, everyone at Leighton Orient was extraordinarily happy about this development, though when Becchetti was first introduced, Frank Warren, who sold the club to him, was pretty happy about that deal too. So the proof of the pudding, as he well knows, is going to be in the eating.
That's so very true. Whatever, I think fans should feel comforted by this because Nigel Travis is a lifelong fan of Leighton Orient. So...
yeah, which Becchetti certainly couldn't claim.
He could not claim that. Excellent. Is there anything else that you wanted to say before we press stop on the big record machine? James?
Ben is saying no.
No?
I just want to say before I'm accused of sexism for saying that only women would watch Love Island, that apparently all the England under-21 squad are absolutely obsessed with it.
Are they?
Yes.
There you go.
Callum Best, I think, won the celebrity one. He was in that.
Yeah.
Along with members from Steps.
Really?
Yeah. That.
Maybe Paul Gascoigne's daughter. Was that?
Yes, Bianca Gascoigne. That's all coming back to me now.
Right. And is there a weekly podcast about it? Has anyone done that yet?
Probably.
Barry, get in. Get on that.
I have a feeling that anyone who wants further Love Island chat might be well advised to tune into Max and myself's radio show on Sunday on TalkSport.
What time will that be?
That will be at 11 a.m.
All right. Simon, you're all done for today?
Well, not exactly. I'm going to start thinking about cricket now.
Okay. It's that time of year, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. We'll be back on Monday, though, where we'll have loads more stuff to talk about. Do send us in any questions you might have. Many thanks for being with us today. Barry, James, Simon, Ben, and you, listener, have a great weekend.
The Guardian.